Hey, PTs, are you maxed out on hours? You tired of endless patient notes? Still chipping away at those student loans? PTLive.me is an on-demand patient clinic hub helping licensed PTs get ahead of the rat race. Stay tuned for more or check out PTLive.me.
The PT Pintcast is powered by International Service Learning. For over 22 years, International Service Learning has been leading volunteers to 12 different countries to provide physical therapy services for those in need. They believe in the power of the individual that chooses to serve and make a difference in the lives of others. They have opportunities in Costa Rica, Belize, Mexico, the Dominican Republic, and many more locations around the globe. For more information about volunteering, visit islonline.org.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs. In a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
All right, here we go. Another episode of the PT Pintcast starts right now. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. Today on the show, he's a pro triathlete, a commentator for Ironman, and he's been known to coach some fast athletes. He considers himself a lucky boy, being able to spend his life doing what he loves and sharing that love with those who care to listen, like me. His journey into life is more similar to that of the everyman or age grouper than most pro triathletes because he was overweight and not very athletic his whole life, peaking out at over 250 pounds. The upside of that journey, he's got a good perspective on what it takes to become a great athlete for nothing. The downside, he would lose most six-pack ab competition against his fellow pros. On the show today, pro triathlete Matt Lieto. Matt, welcome to the PT Pintcast.
How's it going?
I'm doing well, man. First question is always the hardest. What are we drinking tonight?
I've got, I don't know if you can hear it.
Oh, that's good audio.
I got my Pendy on the rocks. That is a Pendy, is short for Pendleton.
Okay.
That is bourbon whiskey.
Oh, I like that very much. And we're just recording audio right now, but I'd like to paint a picture. Matt is in front of a stone fireplace with a glass of bourbon, and the fireplace is roaring. Are you in Oregon right now?
I am, yeah. We've got a bunch of snow. It's about -5 when I went to the pool this morning, and I think it's about 15 today. So, I like to get cozy after a hard workout and drink my blues away.
There you go. I mean, we were like in the 70s on the east, like northeast, like on Christmas Day. We're cooler now, like into the 40s and stuff, but it doesn't even feel like Christmas or New Year's or January here.
Yeah, we're stoked. Ben has felt a little bit more like Northern California the last couple of years. We haven't had much snow. Last year was I'll call it the worst snow year we've had. We had only a couple feet all year, and this year I spent most of my off season, fortunately, been able to go ski and enjoy the snow, and that's why I live in the mountains. I can turn off the triathlon for a couple months and not worry about it and go play.
So I got questions that have to do with that, but I'll get to them. I wanted to talk about your journey. Now, I read a bunch of articles, so I'm assuming you go through this story quite often.
Yeah, it's my deal, man. I mean, the reason I originally decided to turn professional as a triathlete was to kind of share that story to a certain extent, and the summary of that story is, I was 250 pounds. My whole life I was overweight. And I think I started, if you look at pictures way, way back, I wasn't, but that was like first, second grade type stuff. So pretty young, I got a little bit chubby and hard to decide what to blame for that. I had two older brothers, like Chris, my brother Chris, who's also a triathlete. He was like 7 years older, and my other brother was 9 years older. So when I was in second, third grade and I was eating the same things guys going to high school, water polo practice or track and field were eating, and didn't work so well when I was second or third grade. So anyways, I ended up gaining a bunch of weight and was peaked out at 250 pounds when I was in college, second, third year in college, and had a moment where I realized I needed to make a change and try to make a change hundreds of times, you know, when you're overweight. It and was always the kid wearing the t-shirt to pool parties and that sort of thing, and understood there was an issue but kind of thought that was going to be the way it was. And then I went and watched my brother Chris race Ironman World Championships in Kona in 98. It was actually, and it, Chris, I often joke that, Chris came out of the womb with abdominals and is like, it's like God's gift to everything he did, right? Like he was a male model when he was a kid, he was varsity, whatever sport he wanted to be in. And I say this because, like, I think Ironman World Champs was like his third triathlon ever. Or something like that, right? So I hadn't been exposed to triathlon too much. You know, Chris was out of the house, and so I went and watched him race, and it was the I was obviously inspired by the day, but I was inspired in the days leading up to that race of the energy, the types of people, and the community. Our car was like a mile from the expo, and I walked down there every day and mostly just like steal free candy bars from like the expo, right? Like people handing out energy bars or whatever, but go down and check it out, walk back, and I'd be like freaking roach just walking that long in the heat. And you know, was able to get through the race. We volunteer and did some volunteer action on race day out on the run course. I snuck out on the pier and helped out there. And you know, when I came back, I just realized it was like, it's change wasn't going to do itself, and I wasn't ready to give up on the fact that I was able to change. Like I said, I had tried before, but ended up just getting kind of lucky and did the right things at the right time. And had a buddy tell me his philosophy on diet: eat like a king for breakfast, a prince for lunch, and a pauper for dinner. Set your metabolism kind of in the right role, right? And I did that, and I cut out anything in a box, so nothing with preservatives. Right. And in hindsight, actually, I'm a celiac, so in hindsight, I could feel like once I did that, I actually ended up taking out wheat and gluten out of most of it anyway, so that kind of helped me personally, but it was mostly just taking out like a bunch of preservatives and not eating a bunch of crap. Went down to the skate park. You know, to be fair, it was just completely, a lot of it was just luck. They built a skate park down the street from my house, missed a lot of class for 5 months, and I skated 6 hours a day, just hitting the pipe and the snake run at the skate park, and I lost 75 pounds in 4.5 months.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, and the other thing I did that was also key and just like was lucky to think of it was I walked around with a Nalgene bottle right when those things came out. Every time I was hungry, I just would slug the entire Nalgene bottle, 32 ounces down. So I was hydrating myself like I hadn't properly before, and I was just like not allowing myself to binge on a crappy food because I would just throw 2 pounds of water down my stomach, you know.
So where did triathlon fit? I mean, I know you were out at Kona at the World Championships, watching the brother, watching someone you grew up with, you know, knowing that, you know, your brothers, and knowing there's a difference. Did triathlon like play a role in that? Like, did you say, hey, I'm gonna get healthy, I'm gonna do tri, or was it like, I'm just gonna get healthy first and then tri came along?
I think at that point, obviously, I was inspired by what people were able to accomplish on that day. You know, seeing 78-year-old men cross the finish line, like just crazy stuff. You know, that's the most vivid memory I have of that midnight was this old man. Like, if you've ever been to Hawaii finish line, it's pretty crazy at the end of the Ironman, and 100 meters down the road, you can see everybody. And this old man was like bent over at like a 45 or 60 degree angle running, and the crowd is just going nuts. And he, like, as he gets closer to the finish line, he gets like more straight up and down and crosses the finish line. Like, it was that kind of stuff that inspired me, that obviously I was just being a little bit lazy, but I probably was so out of reach, right, that I never thought like, I'm going to come back and do this race, because that was like, there's no, in my head, that was just never an option, right? It wasn't a reality of something that I thought I'd be capable of. So I think it was me just making those changes to get a taste of kind of that atmosphere and that lifestyle, kind of be more a part of that. And at that point in my life, I was way into the outdoors. I actually, my first thing I did the summer I lost my weight was I was a backpack guide and went and did that stuff, and that was kind of more where my passion lied. And to be fair, I mean, the reason I started doing triathlon was so that I could gain fitness to do adventure racing. And even for the first like 2 years of doing triathlon, I was like, I'm just getting myself in good shape so I can go do some actually cool stuff and some, you know, find myself in some cool places. And you know, fortunately and unfortunately, I had kind of a quick rise and ended up being kind of all encompassed with triathlon, and you know, kept going down that road. And yeah, it was great. No regrets. And, you know, it was piece by piece. I had heard of this race called Wildflower that an ex-girlfriend of mine had told me about. I had no idea what that was or what that meant. But when I lost my weight, I was like, I got to do that. And I set the goal to do that race, which is like, for people who don't know, it was the hardest Olympic distance race I've certainly ever done, and kind of known to be some of the hardest courses around. I, of course, set like a goal that I didn't know, but I'm like, I got to go under 2.5 hours in my first try. And I'm like, dude, that's crazy. There's no way you can do that. Wildflower, blah, blah. You know, I was starting from scratch, man. I'd never run a mile. I mean, I'd run a mile, but not like for like the presidential fitness.
Right. High school.
I remember it not being impressive. I think I ran 8:15 all out, you know, so I hadn't done any of those sports. So it was kind of a push, but went to Wildflower and ended up, I don't know what I did, 220 or something like that, but met the goal and realized I was not that far off. And like at that finish line, I wrote myself some goals for the years down the road and managed to achieve those and make some more along the way and achieve some of those. So yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, you talk a little bit about the atmosphere at, I've never been to Kona, but I've been to Ironman races. You talk about the atmosphere leading up to the race. And I tell people all the time, you know, if you ever want to do a try, go watch one and you'll know whether or not, like you get like, you know, hair on your arm starts to stand up and you're like, yeah. I'm like, if that doesn't inspire you, then you probably shouldn't start training for one, because if that's not getting you going, it's not going to be there.
No, I agree, man. And I think for me, a lot of the reason I've probably gone so far and stuck with the sport for so long is and how it ends up. The end of this podcast, people will just realize that I'm just lucky and I fall into stuff. But I'm like in the end, I think the reason I'm a little bashful, but somewhat good at my job as a commentator is that my original love for the sport came out of spectating. So like even watching Chris that day, and then for years and years and years, I'd go and I'd be his support, and I'd be out on that course on a mountain bike and telling him, like, I know that race inside and out, and it's from the perspective of a spectator, right? And it's cool, man, especially if you can get to some of those big races where, and watching anybody achieve that goal, like I said, probably the most inspiring was, you know, 80-year-old man coming across the finish line. But go to a race where there's a strong pro field and put yourself up there and watch that race up close. It's pretty cool to see where people put themselves for a top finish. It's impressive.
I'll be coming in for the first loop on the run, and man, like the pros are, you know, showered, fed, and coming back to start to cheer some of the people on. And I'm just like, I'm doing my first loop of the run right now, man. You're killing me right now. You're killing me.
Yeah, little do you know, we do that just to make you feel bad. There's just you know, we all race to take a shower as quickly as we can and eat so we can you know, make people feel bad about it.
So it is weird talking about yourself in a boastful manner. I just want people to know I had heard the Liedo name. So when I saw you on the roster for talking at the Richmond Endurance Symposium, which I'm going to be down there at, the show's a sponsor. It's on January 23rd in Richmond at the Westin. And I said, yeah, I want to talk to this guy. Your list on your website, I mean, you've done well, man. I mean, that's you went pro in 3 years, and that's not necessarily an easy thing. I mean, people train to go pro. I know some people who were really, really good locally in the Northeast and were never able to make that jump. And they were really good. It's a hard jump. 7 race wins, more than 40 top 10 finishes, including, and I just cherry picked some big ones, like 7th at Ironman Canada twice, 6th at Ironman British Columbia, 5th at Ironman Lake Placid. I did that one. That's a hard course. And then top 40 Ironman World Championships 2 years in a row. That's some pretty big success right there. Now, that's just cherry picking. You got a lot more on that.
I know. And if only I had spent more time cherry picking in my career, I might have some bigger ones on there. But no, man, yeah, I've been stoked, and kind of my goal throughout my career has always been to do the opposite of cherry picking and make sure I go to all the big races. So I think you'll see a lot of those results. You know, some of my best races ever are probably like a 5th place at Vineman 1 year. Like I crushed it, but I put myself against world champions, you know, like so I think there's a lot of races like that. But every time I cross the finish line after a race like that, I know I've push myself harder than if I went to some race where nobody else was and tried to get a win, right? So yeah, no, I've been stoked, and I feel like, I think as you said in my gracious introduction, is that I'm a little more of an everyman, right? And I think, you know, if you look at what I was capable of 5 years in, I probably haven't necessarily, like, you know, my run splits are probably the same, right? But I've gotten the old man strength, and I kind of know how to get everything out of myself in every race. I put myself in the position to win when I can, and then just, you know, scruff things out. And I take pride in the fact that I'm one of those guys that if you watch me race, you'd be like, dude, that guy is hurting himself. Like, that's how I've gotten involved with physical therapists I've been involved with over at Rebound, is they just like saw pictures of me in a magazine and were like, bro, you. you need to like get the glutes into the game, bro. Like you are paddling a boat upstream type of thing, right?
Yeah. So yeah, I wanted to talk about that, but first I wanted to talk about, you know, what you just brought up. I didn't want that to go past without recognizing it. You do mention that, you know, you came into more like an everyman, and it kind of reminded me, I watched some of your videos online. It reminded me a little bit about that, what was that, Mark Wahlberg movie where he plays the dude who walked onto the Eagles? You know, Vince Papale, yeah. Invincible. It just made me think of like that. Like, that's why people, you know, really gave a shit about that guy. He's like, dude is from our neighborhood, walked onto the Eagles, and sure. Seeing somebody who was like, you know, I'm just going to get healthy, and I'm an age grouper. And now, you know, 3 years in, he goes pro. It makes everybody go, wow, cool. It is possible to put your head down and do something. So it kind of makes people feel really cool to see, you know, one of their own up on the podium or leading a race.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you think of, you know, 5 years in, a couple years into me being a pro athlete, or like that first time I did Kona, 5 years removed from that, I was 255 pounds and you wouldn't have noticed, right? So I think that I coach a fair amount of athletes as well. And, you know, that's what I try to share with them. And it's whatever you want, whatever effort you put in, you get out, man. And if you're smart, do things the right way and have some patience, anybody can have success. And, you know, especially even, you know, people that are just wanting to finish an Ironman, like literally anybody can do it. You just need to have a lot of time in your hands, mm-hmm. or be really smart and have someone direct you with a small amount of time that you have and just some pain threshold and some grit, right?
Yeah. That's got to be helpful, because you do coach some people. And when some people are saying, I don't know if I've got it, man. I mean, you've got that one. You've got that one chambered. Like, you know, that picture, like, oh, man, this is me. And then, oh, look at that. So, I turn pro. I mean, that's got to be a great one.
Totally. Or I go on runs with these guys, and I'm like, man. And then after, you know, a couple miles, we'll realize that, like, you know, nobody ever accused me of being a gazelle and, you know, making it look easy. So I'm like, you know, we'll get on some good runs and be like, guys, come on. I'm outrunning you by 4 or 5 minutes in these races. There's no reason it should be happening. Like, That just comes down to grit.
We gotta go pay some student loans. We'll be right back.
Humanity's greatest advances are not in its discoveries, but in how those discoveries are applied to reduce inequity.
Doing what's never been done before is intellectually seductive.
We all need to contribute. Me, you, we. It is our duty.
With international service learning, travel to a new part of the world, learn the skills to help others, and serve those in need. Tap the banner or visit islonline.org/Pandora for more.
The PT Pinecast is powered by ptlive.me. PT Live wants you to know, we know you love ortho, but love doesn't always pay the rent. And let's face it, home health is, well, home health. Join PT Live's growing team of on-demand physical therapists working from anywhere, anytime, with anyone. Screen patients, help clinics nationwide, and next date night you can say, have the ribeye, honey. PTLive.me. We'll take it from here.
Follow us on Twitter at PT Pinecast and online at PTPinecast.com. It's like TMZ, except with way more important information. And no Miley Cyrus. Okay, it's not like TMZ at all.
All right, talking with Matt Lieto, pro triathlete. I do want to mention some of your sponsors, because I think when a company comes on and sponsors you, that's like a vote of confidence right there. So you're sponsored by essentially all the stuff I use. Trek, Segoy, OnRunning.com, Aquasphere. I love those. I love the goggles. Bontrager, Campagnolo, Cyclops, Rebound Physical Therapy. And that is a perfect radio segue into you battling with lots of injuries. You just beating the crap out of yourself. Your body is your machine at work. Your workplace is out on the road, in the pool, on the treadmill, in the gym. So you've had some injuries and you've gotten back on track with, and we love to hear this, physical therapy. So talk a little bit about what you had and how you got back on track with the guys at Rebound.
I don't know if it's the Lieto hip structure or what it is in general, bad shoulders or playing water polo in high school or goofing around or what, but the lower legs are the Achilles heel of me and my brother and Chris, actually. Achilles heel is kind of what going to fit close to him out, more or less. You know, I've just always dealt with lower leg injuries. There was one year where I was off running for a little bit and it was more straight on, like, piriformis, you know, hip stuff directly. But generally, it always comes out in calves. And I mean, even now that I'm on track, it's like, you know, people always ask me why I don't race more cross. It's like, man, by the end of the season, last thing I need to do is jump off bike at 20 miles an hour. Like, my calf's going to rip in two, right? So luckily, I've had good local support here in Bend with the guys at Rebound. Mandon helped me for years. My buddy Timmy Evans helped me for a lot of years. Just helped me realize that, dude, my glutes were not coming to the party at all. And the fact that I was able to do what I was without the help of that obviously pretty major muscle group, pretty ridiculous. And obviously that was what was affecting down the road, you know, my calves, right? And I think Jay more recently kind of fully dialed it in. He came to Bend 2 years ago. I think it was 2 years ago this month is when I sat down with him and had some beers. And, you know, he found that, you know, I had always had shoulder issues, right? Playing water polo in high school, almost had rotator cuff surgery. I mean, when I started doing triathlon, I couldn't swim more than 200 meters at workout because my shoulders were so tweaked. Kind of got through that, but Jay noticed. Jay basically, his whole theory on it's all posture, right? And my shoulders, I was holding my shoulders to my ears type of thing. And basically he just spent 2 months just like ripping open my capsules and just letting the shoulder kind of come out a little bit and getting me to the point where I could hold myself in the right posture. And then it was hilarious. It's still to this day, it still just boggles me. It's like, now my calf hurts. I'm like, okay, Matt, you got to go stretch your shoulders out. You got to adjust your first rib, you know, do all the stuff in your shoulders and stop hunching backwards in your upper body. And then your friggin' calf's going to stop hurting.
It's weird, but, right?
Yeah. So once he opened my shoulders up, we were able to work on the glutes a little bit. Basically now that's it, man. Once my calf's hurt, I go into him to do some body work, but it comes down to like, I do some foot, you know, he's a lot into foot strength stuff. So I'll do some like waggle board stuff where I'm working on that. That's still kind of a weakness for me, but yeah, it's just really trying to open up my shoulders. He showed me the stretches to be able to keep myself open, my chest open, but I would always kind of bend back, right? So it's making sure I'm, you know, activating that transverse abdominis and, you know, putting my chest kind of flat down and the hips kind of take care of themselves. So obviously I do some like glute activation and that sort of thing. And with him, I found kind of my biggest weakness is travel and then trying to race or racing and then traveling.
Sitting down a lot and getting all tight.
Screws my hips and my back. So kind of giving me the tools to when I get to a race, you know, spend 20 minutes as soon as I get off the plane, you know, laying on the double lacrosse ball and, you know, doing some other exercises to open things up and give myself a fighting chance.
You mentioned Jay Jashari. I actually read his book, Anatomy for Runners. Professor had recommended it for me because I really want to get into some running, some tri PT once I graduate in a couple of months. And good, really, really good book. I really wanted to give him a plug for it because I just thought it's really, really well written in terms of a conversational tone with an intelligent message. I mean, is that how he talks? Does he kind of talk how he writes?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, he just has conversations with you, right? And he'll make you think like you have something to bring to the table, right? Which is cool. But no, I mean, Jay's a good dude, and yeah, I mean, literally every pro triathlete buddy of mine that I tell buy the book buys an airplane ticket within a week and comes out and sees Jay. We've had some move here and we've had a lot of return customers, and I think I got a couple guests next month come to see Jay. But yeah, I mean, he knows what's up, and that book shares a lot for sure. Yeah. And what I love about Jay is that, and he's one to give me the most crap of anybody in the off season. Like, he keeps me real. I just did a yurt trip backcountry skiing 2 days with Jay and some other professional athletes in town. Just kind of happened that way. You know, he's like, man, you know what's best for your hips and your shoulders? Skinning up mountains. I'm like, okay, that's cool. So he'll give me crap if I don't. I'm like, you sure I shouldn't be riding my trainer or going for a long run? He's like, no, man, you gotta get your snowboard and go hike up some big mountains.
Sweet. Nice.
And it's sweet because it's smart, man. You hold your shoulders in the right position, pull correctly, and like my glutes had not felt so like comfortably sore after that trip than a long time, because you're like, you're in a plane where I can't not activate my glutes,
right?
If you're thinking about it, right? So it's like, it's that kind of stuff where I think he's super smart and going in. I mean, and he comes up with exercises like while I'm in there. He's like, oh, this would be cool. And I'm like, do you just come up with that? That's amazing. I'm a big fan.
That's gotta be cool too, because again, you get to have that kind of everyman too, because are you currently training people
as far as coaching?
Yeah,
for sure. Coaching people now, coach people for the last few years, and we'll probably move into that as a full-time gig, starting kind of a business focused on coaching and collaborating with athletes this next year. And that's, you know, as I said, that's kind of why I started the sport, was to help other people kind of achieve their goals. And, you know, other jobs and hobbies I've had in the past have all kind of been around showing people how to get the most out of themselves or enjoy the outdoors, right? So I think triathlon and running and cycling independently kind of do all those things at once, right?
The sport of triathlon, I started doing it, I'm going to say in like 2002. And it was still kind of like a weird kind of, what's that? What are the events? What's the orders? You know, from all my friends. Yeah. And now I think the sport is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. How'd you get into that role of commentating for Ironman?
I think I was referred from a buddy. They basically had someone that couldn't go one day, Ironman Wisconsin. You know, I had chatted with the lady who was a producer at a race before. And I think she kind of understood the personality and kind of that I had a certain amount of charisma that I could maybe bring to the table. And she was comfortable with me being kind of the color commentator and the guy who's, I mean, dude, my job there is like, I'm supposed to be the jackass, right? So like the more straight laced kind of co-commentators I have, the more I'm able to kind of fall into that role, right? So for me, you know, kind of their expectations were in line with what I was able to produce. And, you know, we talked off air, like my biggest fear in life had always been speaking in public, like terrified of that, right? So the first time going, I was pretty scared, didn't know what was happening. But for me, like staring at a box is a little different than staring a thousand people looking back at you. And for me, I just have a conversation. Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, I've always been a spectator, so I just watch the screen and watch people that are inspiring me in the moment and kind of try to explain what's going on. And yeah, I've been lucky. I don't know how I've been. Shoot, I think it's been 5 years now that they've let me do that gig. And, you know, it'd be sweet if there was opportunity to do that more full time. But I think, as you said, as the sport gets bigger, I think it'll continue to grow. So look forward to it.
Yeah, more and more races popping up. Favorite race to recommend to somebody who wants to get into the sport anywhere?
Man, Wildflower is still the deal. It's near San Luis Obispo in Northern California. It's like a 3-hour drive from San Francisco Bay Area. I mean, that's one of the first triathlons in the U.S. And up until 10 years ago, there weren't a lot of like paying professional races. And that race had been for years and years. I want to say that was their 30th anniversary last year. And it's just the hardest race you could put yourself on. And then the last 2 years, there's not enough water in the reservoir to run the swim in the normal location. So we've actually had to do a swim, a 2-mile trail run on like gnarly trails, bike ride, and then do the remaining like 2.5-mile run. That's like, it's gnarly. And that race, like that's one that I had always spectated because I raced on Sunday in an Olympic distance race. And, you know, you had guys like the podium was like Jürgen Zach, Neko Janos, and Chris Lee, and Chris McCormick, Simon Lessing, all these guys, right? So that has been a race that has been a part of my life. You know, it's the first one I did. Last year, I was able to get second place there to my good buddy Jesse Thomas, and that was certainly a career highlight for me, and hope to ruin Jesse's day next year and put an end to that, but all good. But, you know, that's one race. Fineman's another race. I mean, they're all a lot of West Coast races. Lake Placid, man, that is an amazing Ironman. If you can get out to Ironman Lake Placid to watch that race or to participate, it's pretty cool.
What's your time on Lake Placid? Make me feel slow.
Dude, I don't even know. I mean, I think that year, man, I try to forget about that year because I was in second place for like 8 hours and 25 minutes or something. And somehow ended up fifth, just came apart. That was when my hips were a real mess. But I want to say I was like 9:02 or 9:05 and like it's 3:15 or something. It wasn't pretty.
Yeah. 3:15, man. You're slow, bro. 3:15. I'm running a marathon at 3:15, just running a marathon at 3:15. I'm ecstatic. I'm calling my mom.
The problem, man, I'm self-deprecation. That's something I'm really good at. And, also good at surrounding myself by super talented people. When you grow up or you end up going, you know, Christmas Day around my house, I'm still, you know, I'm still getting beat in Ironman PRs by like 45 minutes, right? So it's all in perspective. So it's all good.
What are you going to be talking about at the Richmond Endurance Symposium? You're coming in on the 23rd of this month, January, into Richmond, Virginia.
I'm looking forward to it. You know, obviously cool to be involved with something like that. I'm looking forward to listening to other folks and what they have to say. Unfortunately, I've heard two of the other speakers talk way too much, but Lindsey Corbin and my coach is Elliot Bassett, and Lindsey's one of my good friends, so joking, of course, but I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say. But yeah, talking more about my story and kind of what it took to do that, and you know, trying to, you know, portray how to goal set to be able to unlock those goals, right? And you know, kind of the little things to do to give yourself a fighting chance. And, you know, mainly like consistency and training. I think people over, you know, overshoot all the time, and they see these workouts that the pros are doing. And now there's a bunch of stuff you can, you know, I rode my trainer today, and, you know, you've got technology where you can ride with people all around the world. And, you know, I'm wondering if stuff like that's a good idea or not, right? Like, it's
too much, maybe.
Yeah, you gotta be able to be consistent and set yourself a goal to be stronger the next day and then stronger the day after that. And if you're, you know, I'm all about goal setting, but I've had hard talks with a lot of clients that have these like pie in the sky goals, and you got to bring it down, right? It's like, man, before you get to that goal, like, that might be something you can do. Let's look a couple years down the road and see what, you know, what goal do you have to achieve to then in that space be able to look towards that next goal. And I think that's kind of the important things, and that's some of the stuff I'll be talking about.
I like that a lot. I think that happens because we watch, you know, some of these programs, we watch some of these pros do just ridiculous things, but and we just assume they just showed up and they did it, but really there's a lot of little goals that go in between starting and finishing a race.
And dude, in triathlon, like, if you look on paper, Ironman is the easiest thing on the planet, right? Like if you look at me as an athlete and what I'm capable of doing in each sport on its own, like, you tell me all I have to do is run 6:40 pace to win a race. Yeah, that sounds easy. 6:40 pace, I can do that right now. I haven't run in 3 weeks. But that's hard, man. That's when you got to do 26 miles, and you got to do it after that. So I think it's, you know, that's the thing, is people kind of train above their heads and aren't actually training in the zones that are realistic for racing. And for me, it's all about being strong. I mean, in the end, like, if you think of relative, like, for what your PRs are in individual sports and different distances, and from what I am, like, nothing I'm doing on race day is fast. It's not. If I go out and do a half Ironman and I finish running a 118 or 119, for me and what I can do running, that's not fast. So I don't need to be training to be fast. I need to train to be strong so that I know I can do that every day. And that, you know, I'm strong enough so that I can do that after riding my bike real hard. So I think that's kind of the difference, is so many people I train with are training mile repeats at 5:45 pace all day long. And I never do that stuff. I train kind of that strength athlete. I train behind my house. I train a bunch of hills, and I train on trail, and I train to be strong. And when it comes to race day, I'm healthy because I haven't destroyed myself doing all these repeats. So I can empty that tank, and I know I'm strong enough to do it.
I'm going to write that down. I like that. I'm looking towards maybe doing a half at a full next year. You can hear Matt talking in person, Richmond Endurance Athlete Symposium and Expo. They call it a day of motivation and education. You can check out details for that. It's going to be January 23rd at the Westin in Richmond, Virginia. It is just coming up. RichmondEnduranceSymposium.com. So each episode, Matt, is a pint. But before we're done with the pint, we have shots. So now you're drinking bourbon, but what I'm talking about is parting shots. So you got parting shots of wisdom for someone looking to go into the off season, and maybe they're, you know, just like me, an age group tri guy who is looking to do maybe a half next year, maybe a full. What's a pearl of wisdom? What do you got?
Yeah, I mean, I think this time of year, it's you know, it's hard. Everybody's in kind of different climates, and oftentimes I think people can, you know, kind of bang their heads against the wall this time of year, trying to get things done and being motivated or not motivated. So for me, I always think if you have an imaginary bucket of motivation, at the end of the year, that bucket of motivation, if you've timed it right, is pretty well empty. Sometimes there's a little bit left. If you've had great, like last year, we had no winter here, so I never rode the trainer. So my bucket of motivation was full, had a lot of good times. But I think priority for this time of year is making sure that thing's full, man. Like, don't be taking a lot out of that bucket. If you're digging deep, doing these, like other pros are doing 4-hour trainer rides right now, it's like, man, I ain't got time for that. That takes like a ton, two big scoops out of my bucket of motivation. Right. And, you know, I'm watching terrible TV, riding my bike for 2 hours on the trainer, hiking up a mountain and skiing down. Like, I got to kind of balance that so that, you know, that ski is going to put that motivation kind of back in there. And, you know, riding on mountain bike trails, things like that, that don't take any motivation, having fun with buddies. For me, in the winter rides, like, I'll bundle up, and conveniently there's a bakery an hour and 45 minutes from my house. And every winter ride, everybody that rides with me knows we're going to that bakery, man, and we're going to sit down and we're going to have some coffee and we're going to have some baked goods and it's going to be a good time. Right. So like, for me, it's making sure that bucket of motivation is full, so that when it comes time to actually like do some stuff that hurts, because like I said, I think that the biggest misconception is that you got to train hard all the time. And for me, it's, you don't have to train hard all the time, but when it comes time to train hard, you need to train hard. and it might hurt to do so. So you want to make sure that whatever you need to do to keep that bucket of motivation high, if it's having a whiskey before night, before you go to bed, you know, through February, that's the deal. And then you can maybe cut yourself off or whatever you need to do, or going out and doing some skiing and having some fun with friends. That's it. But make sure you keep that thing full.
Cool. I like that. I like that, because it's hard. It is hard, especially when it's cold. And I mean, I like the warm. I like the dry weather in the summer and the spring and in the fall. But the winter, man, can kind of beat you down. So having something like that bucket of motivation in your head lets you know where to put your priorities, so you're actually motivated to do it when race time is actually around. All right.
Steal.
I like that. All right. Looking forward to seeing you in just a little bit. January 23rd, the Richmond Endurance Athlete Symposium and Expo. Got a bunch of cool people talking on a panel. Yourself, Lindsey Corbin, like you said, your coach, Elliot Bassett. We're going to hear from all those guys this week on the show. And you can check out more information about the symposium at richmondendurancesymposium.com. Appreciate you taking the time out. You look like you're relaxed, man, in front of that fire, finishing that bourbon. I just finished. Tonight I was having a Sam Adams Cherry Wheat. Looking forward to buying you a beer and having and listening to you talk at the symposium coming up, Matt.
Yeah, thanks so much, man. Appreciate the time, and I look forward to seeing you all out there.
Like what you hear? Leave us a review on iTunes. It's not like our moms can keep giving us 5 stars every day. Or can they? The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.